Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. The issue of animal agriculture actually impacts not only our water bodies, but it actually is, by UN statistics, not my statistics, by UN statistics, it's the single greatest contributor to global warming. The UN released a report in 1996 called Livestock's Long Shadow about how the livestock industry, the breeding of animals specifically to be eaten, not some family has a farm, they've got a cow, they've got some chickens, but the industrialization of the industry is the single greatest contributor to what was at that time called the greenhouse effect. We now call it climate change. And the reasons for that are huge. I won't spend all night doing this because I could. It's one of my favorite topics. But since we're talking water, I'll just give you one statistic, which is that the amount of fresh water that goes into the production of one meal of beef is the same amount of water that you would use in bathing for 6 months. And not bathing the way they bathe in India, where they fill up one bucket and bathe from it, but the bathing of a shower head that's turned on that goes for 8 continuous minutes every day for 6 months. The amount of water that you would use in 6 months is the same amount of water that goes into one meal of beef. Because, so many aspects, quickly, the trees are being deforested in order to graze them. Also, as we cut the trees, we lose a source of water. Trees actually don't only give us oxygen and fruit and shade, but they actually are a phenomenal giver of water. So in the cutting of them, we lose that water. But then, of course, the animals have to eat something, so that which they eat is produced. The production of anything, whether it's grain, whether it's grass, most of it's grain for them, takes water. The animals themselves drink water. The animals themselves are bathed in water. And then when they're ultimately killed, the sheer amount of water that has to go into separating flesh from blood, from feces, from urine, from all of that, is exorbitant. And what you end up with is, pound for pound, a meal of beef equals, it's about 10,000 liters, about 2,500 gallons of water, which is approximately what you would use in 6 months of bathing. Chicken is about one-third that. And so the question, of course, that those of us who consider ourselves environmental activists have to ask ourselves, because, of course, none of us is the moral police. I'm not going to sit up here and say, thou shalt eat this or thou shalt not eat that. But the question that we have to really ask ourselves on any level of consciousness, whether we call it spirituality or we call it activism or we call it just humanity, knowing what a water crisis we're facing, question is, every time I eat beef, am I prepared to go without bathing for 6 months to offset that water usage? Every time I eat chicken, am I prepared to go without bathing for 2 months to offset that water usage? And if not, Well, then that opens up a really interesting personal introspection question of, well, then on what level do I feel so much more entitled to the planet's resources than my sisters and brothers? And just one other quick aspect of that in terms of resources and food is, along with water, it takes 16 times as much grain to produce meat as it does to produce vegetarian food. So if you start with 16 pounds of wheat, rice, soy, corn, and you use that to make bread or pasta or rice or chapatis or whatever our particular favorites may be, you get pound for pound, 16 pounds for 16 pounds. You start with 16 pounds of grain, you get 16 pounds of food. But if you go the meat way, those 16 pounds will yield you only 1 pound of meat. Because as we understand, the vast majority of what we eat gets digested. It's why we can eat pounds and pounds and pounds of food and not actually gain weight, because we're digesting most of it. Well, so do the animals. So pound for pound, by the time they're killed, 16 pounds of grain have gone in for every pound of beef. So again, the question becomes, on a very deep level, and this is an individual question for us all to ask ourselves, is, do I feel entitled to the food of 15 other people? And again, there's no right answer, there's no wrong answer, there's no moral police, but just an introspective question for us to ask ourselves. Am I really prepared to let 15 people go hungry so I can eat meat? And so thank you for raising that question, because yes, in South America, you know, when we think about the Amazon, to most of us who don't know, one would assume that the Amazon was being deforested by oil interests or other development interests. The truth is, it's being deforested by cattle ranchers. Single greatest deforester of the rainforest, the cattle ranchers. So thank you for raising that point.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. How is it that those who worship the Ganga can pollute it so much? I mean, why are we in this mess, literal and figurative, to begin with? Good question. So there's a couple of points. The first and most important one, I'll share with you how I learned it. I have been very blessed to be here now for 21 years. I'm originally from America, from California. And when I came, one of the things that for me was so confusing is you'd read and you'd hear, Ganga is holy, Ganga is the mother, we worship her. And you'd see people standing on her banks with a polythene bag full of beautiful flower malas, like what you're wearing. And they would stand on her banks and they would chant prayers, and you could see the tears of faith and love pour down their eyes, and they would chant prayers to her. And then they would offer the flowers to her, but they would offer the flowers in the plastic bag. And to me, this was an incredible irony, because the easy answer that people would give is just, oh, well, people don't care. They're apathetic, they're indifferent, they don't really worship her, they only say they worship her, it's just lip service. You know, I mean, there were so many explanations that I had heard. But those explanations did not actually go in concert with what I was witnessing. What I was witnessing was anything but apathy, anything but indifference. I mean, when you see the love with which people pray to her, this is not apathy. And so many people, poorest of the poor people, come to Ganga from across the country. God knows how many days it takes them to get here. I mean, we may think, oh, I'll just book a flight from one end of the country to another end. Let's, you know, go to Rishikesh. But if you're really poor, some of your journey is going to be by bus. Some might be auto rickshaw. Some might be bicycle. Some might be the back of a sugarcane cart. Some could be in some other cart, you know, pulled by a bullock. Some could be walking with your bags on your head. And you'd see people who had spent God knows how many days, the rupees that they had spent God knows how long accumulating to fund their trip, would come here, would buy these flowers, and then would offer them like that. And I'm a scientist by academic training and also much by heart and by mind still. And it didn't work with my scientific mind. I would say, no, if people are apathetic, if they're indifferent, if they don't care, they'd stay home. They'd go to the movies. They'd eat pizza. They would do something else with the money they had accumulated rather than travel thousands of miles to come here. Or if they got here, they'd use their money and they'd buy ice cream rather than flowers for Ganga. So it's not apathy. It's not indifference. And what we realized is it's simply a semantic issue, actually. And an issue of separating content and form. Without going into the whole details of the history, Ganga is a goddess. Prior to there ever being a river, Ganga was a goddess living in heaven who was beseeched by generations to flow onto earth in the form of a river for a very specific purpose of bringing liberation to the sons of King Sagar. That part of the story are not important here. But what is important is that before she was H2O, she was goddess. The H2O is simply the form she took for that task, you could say, of washing over the ashes of these sons in order to bring them liberation. So the water is her form. It's not her essence. And if you talk to people who are throwing the plastic bag that the mala is in, or you go, you know, there's a motorboat that goes across Ganga. It's not running this time of year because the water is too high. But usually you can go right across Ganga by boat. And you would see people with a box of incense sticks. Just they're leaving Rishikesh. They're so sad to be leaving. And they've got a box of incense and they're performing aarti, like what we just did, but with the incense sticks to Ganga from the boat as the boat is pulling them across the river. And then they'll take the whole cardboard box that the incense came in and throw it overboard. And it was the same situation of you cannot write this off as lack of caring. Clearly they care. And when you talk to them and you say something like, you really shouldn't pollute Ganga, what you get is something really interesting. In their mind, the concept that Ganga could be polluted, that is sacrilege. The plastic bag is not sacrilege. The cardboard box is not sacrilege. Sacrilege is the assumption that a plastic bag or a cardboard box could pollute Ganga. Because she's the goddess. And she washes away lifetimes of sins. I mean, people come to bathe in Ganga to wash away lifetimes of sins. What do you mean a plastic bag pollutes her? It's nothing compared to the fact that I was a murderer in my past life. I mean, if she can handle that, and I can emerge from Ganga pure and clean, what's a cardboard box got on her? What's a plastic bag got on her? It's nothing. And so what we realized was, semantically, the campaign had to change. You could not talk about polluting Ganga. You have to begin by the assumption Ganga is unpollutable, the goddess. The essence of Ganga is unpollutable, untaintable, undefilable. Much in the same way that if you took your mother for an evening walk, and on that evening walk, she slipped and she fell into a mud puddle. Or worse, she fell in the sewer. Or somebody dumped a trash bag full of waste out their window onto her head as she was walking down the street. She wouldn't be any less your mother. Her power to bless you wouldn't be impacted in any way by the fact that she fell in the sewer. You wouldn't say, oh God, Ma, you know, I was really looking forward to your blessings tonight. Unfortunately, now you've become defiled. We would understand intuitively, it's just, yeah, her clothes are dirty. Take her home, give her a bath, throw her clothes in the wash. But Mom is Mom. Her blessings are just as potent. Her presence is just as potent. And this is where we've had to separate the semantics, the content from form. So Ganga is unpollutable, undefilable. And yet, the 500 million of our sisters and brothers who live on her banks that I mentioned in the Aarti, well, they are depending on the molecules of H2O. They're actually depending on form, not content. They're not looking to Ganga for liberation. They're looking to Ganga for water to drink. They're looking to Ganga for water to irrigate their fields. And so when you can talk to people and say, yeah, Ganga herself is undefilable, but you know that plastic bag, downriver, it's going to wash up. Some cow's going to eat it. That cow's going to suffocate and get sick and die. Or you know that plastic bag, a fish is going to swim into it. And when the fish swims into it, it sucks against the fish. And the fish can't open her gills and breathe. So the fish suffocates and dies. And then people go, oh. And lo and behold, they don't put the plastic bag in Ganga because they got it. But they got it with a different semantics. It cannot be a teaching that is rooted in the idea that the people who love her are defiling her due to their apathy or due to their indifference or due to anything like that. And that's how we've been working. So what we realize is we're praying to essence. And yet, lastly, we're now in a place where we need to pray to form also. And this is actually a lot of what we've been doing is this bridging of content and form. Content is divine, yes. But form is also divine. Water, regardless of whether it's Ganga, the goddess-infused water, or whether it's Lake Michigan, or the Mississippi, or the Colorado River, or the Thames, or the Danube. I mean, it doesn't matter what body of water. They're actually all sacred because water gives life. And anything that gives life, regardless of whether it also gives liberation and also washes away our lifetimes of sin, is also holy. And so we're looking to bridge that content and form, but this is where you see that paradox. Don't think it's that they don't care. They do care, they just don't understand. And this is where education is so important.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. We have a battle of brothers, cousin brothers, but brothers. The dharmic Pandavas, and I won't go into the details of that, but just take my word for it. They are the dharmic Pandavas, and the Kauravas, who are their cousin brothers, led by a blinded by his own ego, blinded by his own greed, blinded by jealousy, Duryodhan, who deprives his cousins of their rightful land. They were supposed to have the whole kingdom. Then he says, I'm not going to give you this. I won't give you this. I mean, it goes on and on. It's a very incredibly divine but long story that I won't go into. At the very end, after the Pandavas doing everything that they were supposed to do, giving everything they were supposed to give, they're still refused that which is rightfully theirs, that which was rightfully theirs from the beginning. And Duryodhan ends by basically saying, I won't give you the amount of land on the tip of a pin. Now, these are people who are supposed to, you know, head kingdoms. I won't give you anything. So Krishna, the divine, but who's embodied in form as a king himself, his advice is sought. He tries to convince Duryodhan to do the righteous thing. Duryodhan won't hear of it. They do everything they can do to avoid this fight. Finally, there's no option for Dharma, in order to restore Dharma to the people of this area, which is basically a huge area where Delhi is now, but extending far out, they have to go to war. So that's where the Bhagavad Gita takes place, is on this battlefield. Now, it begins with Arjun basically saying, forget it. I'm not going to fight. I'm not going to fight because those are my family members. It's my gurus over there. Forget it. Nothing's worth it. Forget it. We won't have any land, okay? No amount of land is worth it. And the Bhagavad Gita is Krishna teaching Arjun about life. Okay. So one of the teachings, as you've just raised, is he says to Arjun, stand up and fight. Arjun says, I don't want to fight. Krishna says, you must do your duty, whether they're your family, whether they're your guru. But, oh, before I get into the question, so he's asking, Krishna says this, you must do it. He says, but why bother? Why bother doing good karma or bad karma if we're going to have to reap the fruits of both and that's just going to keep us coming back? If I'm going to have to keep taking birth to reap the fruits, whether they're sweet or whether they're sour, why bother do anything? Right? This is your question.
Hmm?
Yes, exactly. Okay. Yes. Okay, so why bother acting? Either I'm going to get heaven or I'm going to get hell. I'm going to get something good. I'm going to get something bad. Why bother? Okay, now, first of all, when Krishna says, stand up and do your duty, there's a very important, crucial, and fundamental aspect of this. It's not stand up and do your duty, which is to kill them. Lord Krishna's bottom line message is, really, Arjun, and exactly who are you to be the taker of life? Where did I go and leave you in charge of who lives and who dies? Because what Arjun is going through is, in modern day slang, an ego trip. Arjun is having this, I can't kill them, that's a bad thing to do. And Lord Krishna basically says to him, oh, really? And when did you become the giver of life or death? When did you become the one who determines who lives and who dies? This is all now in your hands, Arjun? Did you forget who I am? And this is what the Gita is Arjun. It is not up to you who lives and who dies. You are going to fight this battle because that's your duty, but who lives and who dies, that's me. You're not the one making that decision. You're not the one in whose hands destiny is. I, as God, have not stepped aside and hired you in my place. I'm the doer, you're the tool. Do your duty because that is how you, in this incarnation, have the possibility of attaining moksha, of attaining freedom. Freedom from what? Well, on the basic level, freedom from this cycle of birth and death. But what does that mean? It means freedom from that which chains me. Which, of course, we're able to have while we're alive. I mean, Pooja Swamiji emphasizes over and over again, moksha is not just after death. Moksha is being free of that. That illusion, that ignorance, which binds me to this form, which makes me think I'm the doer. That this hand is the hand of a killer or the hand that's given life. this hand is just flesh and blood. It has no power to give or to take life. And what kind of an ego trip would my hand have to be on to even think that it could give or take life? That's what God does. God's the giver and the taker. We're just the tools. But in this life, in this particular lila, this drama, this act of the show, you're playing the role of Arjun. It's a costume, it's a mask, it's a role. But the part you've been given is the part of the warrior. And in order to play your part of the warrior, you better pick up your bow and arrow. But do not think you're the director of this show. You haven't written this script. I've written this script. I'm directing this show. You're just wearing the costume, wearing the mask, playing your role. Your only job is to play this role I have given you to the very best of your ability. And to stop wishing you had a different role. Right? At one point, Arjun says, I'm just going to go off to the mountains and meditate. And Krishna's like, not in this life. You are not a sannyasi. I've given you the role of a warrior. Stop wanting to play their part. They're the ones I've given the role of sannyasi and sage and rishi and meditator to. Look down. You're wearing the costume of the warrior. It's because I've given you that role. You do not get to change costumes mid-show. This is the teaching. Stop thinking it's about you. It's not about you. You're a tool in my hand. So the stand up and do your duty is not go get him, Arjun. Kill the bad guys. It's not that. It's play your role, Arjun. Stop complaining. Stop wishing you had somebody else's costume or role. Your only possibility to be free is in this role. Play it to the best of your ability, but lastly, how do you get free then? Because as you so rightly said, the karma we do gives us fruit. We do good things, we get sweet fruit. We do bad things, we get bitter fruit. But in any case, we've got to keep coming back to eat the fruit. And if the bottom line teaching is that the highest level of moksha, the highest level of liberation, is not to have to take another body, not to have to come back, well, then what do you do? And this is where Lord Krishna gives it so beautifully. And he says, you can't not do anything. Because this also, Arjun gives the same argument. He says, well, then forget it. This is just going to accrue more karma for me. I don't want it. And again, Krishna says, oh, really? And how exactly do you expect not to accrue any karma? Because not acting is acting. If I'm walking down the street and somebody trips and falls in front of me, I have two choices. I help them or I don't help them. Right? Those are the only options. Do something, don't do anything. If I bend down and help them, you could say that's something good. I've helped somebody. But if I'm worried about not accruing any karma, in a state of illusion, I might say, well, I'm not going to help her because even though it's good and the karma is going to be good and sweet, I don't want to accrue any karma. So I'm just going to walk by. Well, not helping her is also an action. Walking by and not bending down and helping is also an action. And I accrue that karma. So this is where Lord Krishna says, you can't not act. You could sit down, you could sit on your hands, you can close your eyes, close your mouth, but you can't not act. Because sitting down, closing your eyes, and sitting on your hands is not fulfilling your duty, which is an action. Failure to fulfill your duty is an action, which means you're stuck both ways. Fulfill it, you've acted. Don't fulfill it, you've acted. This is where he says, and the answer is only fulfill your duty, but recognize you are not the doer. Recognize all you are is a tool. I am the doer. Get that sense of doership out of your mind. Get that sense of pride out of your mind. Get that sense of separation from me out of your mind. Whatever you do, offer it to me. Right? This is when he says, take my name and fight the war. Remember me, fight the war. What does that mean? Remember me and fight the war. Well, this is the mantra for our lives. Remember me, fight the war. It means connect to God. Whatever name, whatever form, it can be Krishna, it can be any. Remember me. And then fight your war, fight your battle. Whatever your life battle is, whatever your duty is. But by remembering me first, you're offering what you're doing to me, which is you're doing it as a tool in my hands. And that's the only way not to accrue the karma. If you're doing it as you, if you're doing it as the doer, if you think, oh, I'm the one who's doing, I'm the one who has done, either the good stuff or the bad stuff, I was so good or, oh my God, I'm useless, either way, you get karma. So he says, just surrender it to me. Surrender it all to me. And that's the only way.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. Is every human being born with a purpose to fulfill? Yes. Or are we born to lead a regular life with a family to live and to die? Yes. The two are not mutually exclusive, and this is really the problem when we conceive of spirituality, is that somehow, and particularly when we think about our purpose in life, it's a topic that comes up a lot, because these days, this was not true when your grandparents were your age. In many cases, it wasn't even true when your parents were your age. They grew up, they got educated, maybe they got a job, maybe they didn't get a job and got married, but in any case, if you conducted an interview of your grandparents or your great-grandparents, or as I said, in some cases, even your parents, and you said, did you ever struggle with what your purpose on this earth was? Very few of them would say yes. Very few. Doesn't mean things were easy. It doesn't mean they didn't struggle with their husband or wife. It doesn't mean they didn't struggle with their kids. Doesn't mean they didn't struggle with their health or to make ends meet. But this idea that somehow we have a purpose, and our purpose is this elusive thing that somehow is separate from the breath we take, separate from the love we give, separate from how we move through our days, that somehow there's my life and then there's my purpose. And this is actually what I think is causing a lot of turmoil for a lot of people these days, because our purpose is to be who we are. And who we are is divine, sacred, holy consciousness. I mean, that's what we are. We're not the body, as we talk about in here all the time. We're not the emotions. We're the soul, we're the consciousness, we're love. So our purpose is to recognize that. We can recognize who we are in the role of a banker. We can recognize who we are in the role of a policeman or a fireman. We can recognize who we are in the role of a school teacher. We can recognize who we are in the role of a housewife or a homemaker. There's nothing that says your purpose is your career. And this is where we've ended up really having the confusion. Our purpose is to live as consciousness. Our purpose is to live as love, to live as souls, to live as spirit. Whatever job we're doing, we can use it to fulfill that role, to fulfill that dharma, to fulfill that purpose. Born and die, it happens to all of us. Whether you discover your purpose or you don't discover your purpose. Whether you live as a body and your emotions and your relationships, or whether you live as love and consciousness, we're all born, we're all gonna die. We all have a family. Whether we actually get married and have children of our own, or whether we just have the family that we came into. So those three aspects, born, family, die, true for everyone. The only question is whether through that born, family, die, do we also discover something else? And this is where my favorite story on this comes in. True story, I've got a background in psychology, and so I love the studies and the experiments and all of the psychological tests that they did that teach us so much about human nature. And my favorite one is the test where they take a group of subjects who are students and they divide them and put them down to watch a basketball game, a video of a basketball game, a 6-minute video. And they're told that their job in watching this video is to count baskets. How many baskets does the red team make? How many baskets does the white team make? And At the end, they've got a piece of paper with three questions. Number one, how many baskets did the red team make? They all get it right. It's very easy. Number two, how many baskets did the white team make? Also very easy. Everybody was watching. It was only a 6-minute game. They all counted the baskets perfectly. Third question was, did you notice anything else? More than 50% of them said no. They got the baskets right. How many red team, how many white team? Didn't notice anything else. Turns out, halfway through the game, into the center of the court, an enormous gorilla had come straight onto the court, occupied the entire camera frame, and had proceeded to dance for 30 seconds. Now, in a 6-minute game, 30 seconds is a really long time. Here's why I love this so much. I love it because it's the story of our lives. Why did more than 50% of intelligent, aware, focused subjects, I mean, they all got the baskets right. They had their eyes open. Nobody had fallen asleep. Nobody had gotten distracted. How could they be properly counting baskets and miss the dancing gorilla? And the answer is what happens in our lives. It's not what they were told to look for. It's really as simple as that. If in the beginning the experimenters had said, count the baskets of the red team, count the baskets of the white team, oh, and make sure you don't miss the gorilla dancing in the middle of the court, no one would miss it. But that was actually the whole experiment. The experiment had nothing to do with counting baskets and everything to do with whether they noticed the gorilla. So what happens is we're given a task, we're given a job, and we do it. And we do it well. And like they were told to count baskets, in our lives what we're told is get a good education, get a job, have a family, make money. This is your job. And we do it. We do it well. And then we get to the point in our life, for many of us, sadly, it's not until the end of our life, but more and more, thankfully, people are coming around earlier and earlier, and the fact that you're here in Rishikesh, in satsang, means you're already there. You're asking, is there anything else? Okay, I've done what I was told. I've counted the metaphoric baskets. But have I missed anything? Did I miss the dancing gorilla? Did I miss the most obvious thing? Did I miss the point of it all? And sadly, most of us do. And the point of it all is that purpose. Do not think that your purpose is being the head of some company or doing this or doing that. May happen. Companies have to be headed by someone. Things have to be invented by someone. Someone's got to be president. Someone's got to be prime minister. But when we really talk about our dharma, when we talk about our purpose, it's not about you are supposed to be this extraordinary being. You are supposed to do something that no one has ever done before. Invent something, create something, do something, write something, be someone. That's what we're all being indoctrinated into believing, that purpose is equivalent with something that is extraordinary. Most people don't want to believe that their purpose might just be to be born, to have a family, or to be part of a family, whether a blood family or we say Vasudev Kutumbakam, the world is a family. So to be part of that world family with love, with consciousness, with giving, with taking care. For the vast majority of us, that is our purpose. Our purpose is to fulfill our role. And it's not higher or lower, it's not better or worse, it's not that the lucky ones end up as prime minister or president or, you know, Miss Universe, and the rest of us just get stuck with the rest. Pujaswamiji tells actually a great story about that. Many, 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 many years ago, even before I knew him, he was at an event in Hollywood, a birthday party of a woman who had actually just been crowned as Miss Universe. And it was one of those really big Hollywood sort of who's who events. And the people he was staying with in Los Angeles were in the movie industry, and the party was at their house. So he's staying at the house. Now they've got this party at the house. Miss Universe is at the house. So he gives a satsang. And after the satsang, Miss Universe says to him, "I really want to talk to Swamiji. Can I have a few minutes with Swamiji?" And so he says yes, and the host brings her up, and she speaks to him just about how to connect with God and find a deeper meaning, a deeper purpose in her life, you know, recognizing how shallow the whole Miss Universe thing was. A few minutes later, her husband comes in and says, "I've got to have a few minutes with Swamiji." And he says, "Okay, sit down." And the husband just starts complaining about the wife. He says to Swamiji, he says, "I don't know anything." You know, they were Americans, not Indians. He says, "I don't know anything about this karma theory." He said, "But what I know is I must have done something really bad in my past life in order to end up stuck with this lady in this life." And Swamiji was amazed. He said, "You just married Miss Universe, literally. Your marriage was broadcast on, you know, international television. Everyone in the world, all the men, must have been thinking, why not me?" And this guy looks at Swamiji and he says, "She's not Miss Universe, she's Mess Universe." And I've heard Pujaswamiji tell this story for so many years now, and I love it because when we think about purpose, or you think about achievement, certainly becoming Miss Universe is right up there on the list of things that most of us think would be really fun to become, or Mr. Universe. But here you are in a situation where Miss Universe's own husband is cursing his karma for having made him stuck with this lady. So our purpose, our dharma, it's not about what title do I get. It's about how am I living and what am I spreading? Because however we live, that's what we spread. Live like an air conditioner, you're going to spread cold air. Live like a heater, you're going to spread hot air. Live in anger, in pain, in confusion, in jealousy, in judgment, in materialism. Well, that's what you're going to share with people around you. Energetically, we literally exude frequencies. And that's what people pick up on. But when we live as love, as consciousness, as oneness, that's what we exude. And it's not a lower purpose, it's actually a very, very high purpose. So circling back to the question, it's yes and yes. Yes, we are born to live, have a family, and die. And yes, we have a purpose. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week. And I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on OM Times Radio.